Welcome to Special Sauce, Sirius Seed's podcast about food and life. Every week on Special Sauce, we talk to some of the leading lights of American culture, food folks and non-food folks alike.
Traditionally, every region of China has a few words to some of their food. Like, Sichuan is mala, so it's spicy and tingly. That's their profile. Our profile is xiangla and suan. So suan means sour, xiangla means fragrantly spicy.
This week, Jason Wang is in the house. Jason, along with his dad, David Shi, are the owners and operators of, I'll let you say it,
Xi'an Famous Foods.
A fast casual Chinese concept where they serve the foods of their family's province.
Right. Well, from our province as well as the Xi'an, the city itself.
Okay. So it's both the city of Xi'an and it's the province of
Shaanxi.
In northwestern China. Thank you so much for helping me out, Jason.
No problem.
Thanks to Jason and his father, David Shi, a different kind of Chinese food is entering the American food mainstream. Move over Canton and Sichuan. There's a new province in town. Welcome to Special Sauce, Jason.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
It's great to have the person who introduced all of us to lamb face salad. But what happened to it? It's not on the menu anymore.
It's a hard item to get these days. It's as special as it is. You know, I have to admit, it wasn't the top seller of our restaurant. It's popular with our diehard fans, of course.
Right.
But, you know, it'll make a comeback, and, you know, we could talk about it a little bit as well. Yeah.
Excellent. Excellent. We start by asking our guests about their family table. And
sure.
In your case, I'm particularly interested about what your family table was like growing up.
Sure. For our family, you know, being a typical Chinese family, when I grew up in China for the first 8 years of my life, it was, you know, a typical thing for a family to sit down together at the end of the day to enjoy a meal together. It doesn't have to be a very extravagant meal, especially for our family. It's as simple as 2 to 3 dishes and some rice or noodles. And, you know, I personally, as a kid, I didn't really care much about the food. I was just ready to finish what I have to eat and just go and play with my friends and watch some TV before my piano lessons, of course.
Piano lessons, man. They're serious. Your parents are serious. When did you start taking piano lessons?
Right. So my father actually bought the piano for me before I was born. And then when it was already there. So when I was turned to 2 or 3, I started practicing and started getting, like, you know, taught by a teacher at our home and, you know, every week. And it was just something I just had to do.
And did you end up hating it as a result?
Oh, yeah, I hate piano. I mean, I like having that experience, of course, because it actually taught me a little more about musicality and, you know, just subconsciously, I know that it plays a role in just everyday life. Mm-hmm. But for me to go play a piano now, I would not be able to know how because I sort of just walked away from them.
And so what was life like for your family in China? Did your parents both work?
Yes. Well, my parents both worked and, you know, they weren't home during the day. I lived with my grandfather who took care of me, who, you know, would pick me up for school in China, for elementary school at least. There's a midday, like a siesta, almost like a lunch break where you go home to eat and then you nap for like an hour or something. Then you go back to school. So, you know, he would take care of me for that and he would get started on dinner as well for me growing up. So, you know, back to the family meal, of course, it's, you know, we do have those, but the big family meals are usually when there's a holiday, the extended family would come over, our uncles, aunts and cousins. And, you know, everyone will cook something and it'll be a big feast.
Got it.
So that's kind of how I was growing up.
And what did your parents do?
Well,
for work?
They did various things.
There,
you know, I don't really.
In China.
Yeah, they did various things I don't really want to go into that
Got
much
it.
About. But my father's always involved with restaurants and, you know, hospitality and things.
Even
like
there.
That. Even there, yes.
Got it. Tell us a little bit about the province.
Sure, sure. So Shaanxi province is different from some folks might know of another province called Shaanxi. They sound very similar. They're actually right next to each other, but they're a little bit different. I'm from Shaanxi. That's kind of like the province where the ancient city of Xi'an, or also known as Chang'an, is from. Chang'an is like the old name for Xi'an. It's the same place, but it was the home to 13 different capitals of ancient China back when there was emperor and stuff. So it has a lot of history, a lot of monuments, a lot of like ancient buildings and mausoleums that were made by these emperors of different eras. So of course, it's also known for the terracotta soldier statues.
Which are the ceramic soldiers that are in the countryside.
Right. They're in the countryside now. Because that's where the first emperor's mausoleum is back like 2,000-something years ago that was built. And it's a vast, for people that don't know, it's like a vast quote-unquote army of terracotta life-size soldiers, some with actual different facial features that are distinct to themselves as if they're actual different unique people.
And it must be a big tourist attraction.
It's a big tourist attraction. Yeah. And that's kind of on the outskirts of the city. But growing up inside the city, you know, you're surrounded by history. There's the Drum Tower, the Bell Tower, which are landmarks such as like the Empire State Building in New York City.
Yeah, I looked at photos online of it.
Yeah, it's kind of like the landmarks. And they don't allow buildings to build above it. So it's always the city itself within the city walls are always this kind of medina of a
right. It's like an old city wall.
Exactly. Yeah. So I grew up within those walls, and that it's still, thankfully, still the same way within those walls these days.
And you came over your parents with you when you were 8.
My father came in a little bit later, but we were kind of together here and there. Pretty much grew up all over the U.S. actually.
So. And was it hard to emigrate?
Yeah, I mean,
did they make it hard there?
Especially back in those days, I think it's just very hard for someone to immigrate over to the U.S. We had some business over here, so we immigrated that way. I know for some folks, it means immigrating through family connections and whatnot. So that's how we got over here. But, you know, at that time, I wasn't really for it because I had friends there. I had family there. I knew the language. I knew the culture. Coming to a foreign place, it was kind of like, you know, I don't really want to. Why?
Right.
You know?
Why?
But it was really
why?
For education.
My life is good.
Yeah. It's for the education. It's for the freedoms. It's for the environment. You know, it's just China wasn't that developed back then, of course. It's gotten better these days. There's still a lot of work to be done, of course. But back then, it was a different place. So.
And the president of China is from your province.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. That's a big thing because ever since President Xi became president, there's been a lot more attention on the province of
your
Shaanxi.
Province is totally legit.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, everyone has to make it legit, anything, you know. So, but it is. It really is. It's a very historical place. It's besides the ancient, you know, history of it. It's also important to note that's where the new China's revolution, communist revolution. That's where it started during the World War II, basically.
Right.
And so that's kind of like where the base was as well. So it has a lot of history, old and new China. So.
And it's also. It's not small.
No,
that city is 12 million people.
That city is a sizable city these days. Yeah, it's growing as well. And the province itself is also vast. And speaking of food cultures in the province, even within that one little province, there's north, there's south, and there's different customs in the way that the food is made. Someone from Xi'an, the city, might not even know about the food of the northern part of the province. It's geographically, I think people were separating in the old days, and they make different foods and cultures.
Tell us about your dad's work life here, because
sure.
I was particularly interested in reading about that.
Of course. It almost sounds very stereotypical. My father's work life in the U.S. is kind of what you would imagine to be, someone who's a middle-aged immigrant from China who doesn't speak any English, who has no, you know, Western education, coming into a country where everyone speaks English and it's a different culture. There's only a few things that he could really do in this country, and that one of those would be, you know, work in a restaurant. So when he's in the U.S., he pretty much worked over a decade in the restaurant business.
But all over, not just you were living.
Absolutely. The reason we moved a lot is because of his work. Because first we were moved to the Midwest, and then after a while, we're like, okay, well, there's not a lot of work here for him, you know, let's move over to the East Coast. And we ended up in Connecticut, and where he found more work, but then it wasn't as convenient. There's no big Chinatowns or, you know, communities in Connecticut. There's small pockets, but not like New York. So, you know, we moved on over here. And so we always kind of followed where work was. And for him, he worked all over the place. He actually mostly worked outside of New York City because...
Yeah, and you said he was often away for weeks at a time, right?
Right. So he would be away. You know, typically, I mean, there's some great articles out there about this as well in terms of Chinese restaurants in states are not like where big cities are, where like New York City is or you know, Chicago or D.C. or Boston. On the other, you know, other states such as like Maryland or North Carolina or Virginia, those or Pennsylvania, those states have Chinese restaurants too, but they're kind of, you know, remote. So he worked mostly along the eastern seaboard at those types of restaurants where he would take a bus over to somewhere close to that place and someone pick him up from the restaurant. And he would basically live in the boss's house with the other workers for like, you know, I've been to one of these. It's actually really interesting. They live there like almost like a family. And then, you know, people go to work, they come back to the house. They work, they come back. And then after a couple of weeks, they take like a week off. They go to, they'll come back to their families, wherever. For us, it was in New York. He would come back and I would see him. So in middle school and high school, it's pretty often that I wouldn't see him for at least like 1 or 2 weeks or until he gets fired, of course. That's pretty often as well.
Now, why? You mentioned that in a couple of other stories I read. Did he get fired just because people get fired in restaurants or because he was not the world's best employee?
I think both, you know, to be honest. Yeah. Restaurant turnover obviously is very high. And, you know, working in those restaurants is not easy work either, of course. And the commute is obviously pretty difficult as well. I remember him telling me this one story of, you know, to make money. One winter night, the boss had a dishwasher that called out. And so he was like, you know, it's really, really busy over here, and like 2 hour drive away. And he's like in Connecticut somewhere. He's like, I need a dishwasher. Come over here. I'll give you $100, you know, for the whole night. So, you know, that was a lot of money to him. So he basically drove a couple hours in the snow to this place, got in there, just started washing piles of dishes for like pretty much the whole day. And then to the point where he tells me his story is a little dramatized, but I believe him. You know, he washed until his hands were like pretty much like numb and like shaking. And then at the end, you know, boss gave him $150 because he felt he did a good job. And then, you know, he drove 2 hours back. So it was hard work, you know. So there's a lot of folks that still go through that these days. It's just very difficult. But so the job itself is hard. There's multiple reasons why he probably didn't do a good job all the time. He has a personality as well. I work with him. So but other than that, it's also just I think he also had his eyes always on what he ultimately wanted to do.
Which was to open a restaurant, maybe, but he didn't start out his entrepreneurial life opening a restaurant, right? Like, right. How did he get started?
Well, you know, he always had this thought about opening a restaurant, not just a restaurant, but more of an eatery where, you know, nothing fancy. He didn't think about, oh, I'm going to open one of these big buffet joints in like middle of Virginia or something like these folks I work with. It's more about, you know, I just want to open up something for myself to showcase the food that I cook at home that represents my hometown. That's what he had in the back of his head. But because of me, really, because I had to get an education.
It's all your fault.
Yeah, it's all my fault. Oh, you know, I got delayed. You guys could have had Shan Famous Foods a lot earlier if it wasn't for me, you know. But I had to go to school. There's expenses for that. And so he helped me get on the right track first.
Because that must have been super important to him.
It is, you know, because we pretty much grew up very frugally, going through middle school and high school. You know, we lived in like a basement, and I never had anyone over because it was kind of weird because in the whole neighborhood, everyone has their own houses. Everyone has their, you know, this and that. And for me, it's just like I live in kind of like someone else's basement. They do their laundry. They come down and, you know, it's I was like, my room didn't have windows. It's just like a dark room. And so I was like, you know.
And where was this?
This was in Bayside. This was where I went to high school.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, it's. That's how we kind of, those were the days spent until I got to college. And it was just about saving and, you know, getting to that ultimate goal, quote unquote.
Right? It must have been so, did you feel the pressure?
Yes.
From your parents?
I mean, I definitely felt the pressure, you know, and I realized that, you know, my dad works really hard to provide and I just had to do whatever I could to get into decent school, which I believe I did. You know,
you did.
Washington University.
Got,
I actually just went
to Wash U T-shirt.
I just got the shirt.
I've seen a lot of video of you wearing that T-shirt.
I show a lot of school pride because I just came back from a 10-year reunion from there, and it was nice to be back. But you know, it costs a lot. Of course, a college education in the U.S. is no joke. So, but that's kind of how we grew up. But you know, at that point when I got to college, and you know, whether it's a mix of scholarships and a mix of you know, money that we saved up for that, I was already on my way. So that's when my father was like, okay, I could kind of like take it easy a little bit. I have a little bit of money set aside that's left over after I already paid for Jason's education. I'm going to do something now. It's for myself, really. So that's when he started Shan Famous Foods, back in 2005.
And he had already opened a bubble tea franchise, right? Or is that at the same time?
That was the time. That was the first iteration of this business, I guess. The truth is, it started as a bubble tea franchise location for one of these small franchises in Flushing. He, at that time, you know, and same as now, bubble tea is still very hot these days.
Yeah.
You know, people still like their boba, but now it's like about the cream boba, like the cheese drinks, the cheese teas. Those are actually really good. But back then, when I have that, we had just simple milk boba bubble tea, and it was doing really well in Flushing. And he thought, oh, this will be a good hedge against the risk. You know, it's low cost, higher margin. I could sell this and then, you know, maybe sell some food on the side. So he kind of took on the franchise, but he also sold some food on the side from our hometown, like namely like our cold skin noodles, our liang pi, you know, the burgers and a little bit of the noodles. That back then, the noodles were not what they were today. It was just like a side thing. But so that's how he got started.
So literally he had this bubble tea franchise. And then was there a secret menu? Was it like In-N-Out Burger, or that people just knew that I can get some cold skin noodles along with my bubble tea?
There's definitely a feeling of that. Even though it's not like animal style, your bubble tea to get a side of, liang pi or something. There is a menu, but it wasn't like technically allowed for the bubble tea franchise under the agreement. He just kind of sold it as a small thing on the side. But people did find out about it. They actually did make their way over there to have that food. Not so much about the bubble tea. So it became kind of like a little underground thing that was going on in Flushing at that point.
And I assume that was, at first, mostly Chinese people.
Oh, absolutely. Because Flushing, as you know, Ed, it's very heavy with the Chinese population. And that's kind of how we get started. We have to have that approval from the local folks over there. And, you know, we did, because we sold the products we sold at that point were so new that when I went back for break, that's when my father told me he opened the shop. I didn't know the whole semester that I was gone, the first semester of college. I didn't know who he was up to. I went back. He said, oh, yeah, I have this bubble tea shop now. You're going to help out on your break, right? You're going to cashier. So I was like, all right. But I was kind of happy because it was nice to see this type of food there. And I think that's what people felt all around that time is that, oh, wow, we get to see a new type of Chinese food now.
And that's 14 years ago.
That, wow, yeah. Now you say it really is.
Yeah.
It was.
You're getting old, dude. I don't know how to break it to you. 10-year anniversaries, man.
I know. That's a wake-up call.
You're over.
It's over. Oh, man. No more retirement.
So he opened the bubble tea business. You help out. You get your degree from WashU.
Right.
Great school. But did he encourage you to come back to the business, or did he encourage you to go completely legit and get away from the restaurant?
Well, for my father, he is an unorthodox type of person himself. So I don't think there's ever a set path in like deep down. He doesn't believe in a set path. Of course, for my sake, he probably always pushed me towards getting education, a good education, solid background first. But after that, after I got my degree, he was kind of silent about where to go. Obviously, when I got my first job and my internships before that, he's always very happy about it. He's like, oh, that's good. You got to keep doing this. You know, you're doing a good job with that, which he rarely says. He rarely compliments me. But so I was like, okay, I'm going on my
path. I could tell there are still issues, right?
Issues never
gets resolved.
I don't even think of their issue. They're just things I, you know, a part of life now, you know? And but yeah, no, we would definitely speak more to that. I could go on and on, but the thing is, you know, he never said much after I graduated. It's because I was kind of, I think he just wants me to figure out what I wanted to do. And at that point I was working in Minnesota.
Right. For Target.
Yeah. For Target and their headquarters for as a merchandising and business analyst. So,
God, that sounds deadly.
It's like going to another school, basically, because then you graduate from college as a senior into being a freshman at this huge company with thousands of people, and you're the freshman again. You know, you got your manager, you got your director. It's a whole iteration of college, I think. But, you know, I obviously went to school with the goal of trying to work corporate. That, you know, you don't pay that much money to just go back to your family business. You know, that was kind of like the sentiment, really. It's unspoken, but it's a sentiment.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to at least try it.
So how long did you last?
I lasted 3 months or so. You know, I was...
That's not very long.
Yeah, it's not very long at all. It was like an internship.
Right.
So, you know, it wasn't really for me. And while, you know, I can make all sorts of excuses and say I was just not into it, you know, I didn't do that great of a job at it. I was late constantly and I was not really understanding the... I didn't really put my heart into it. I didn't really care enough to... do so. But, you know, at that point, I was also a little distracted with the possibility of helping the business. Because before I graduated, it's not just when I started working. It's years before that. Ever since I helped cashiering the first year, every break I've been back, I pretty much helped out.
Right.
And I see the lines. I see the people being so enthusiastic about this food.
It and got so you me sort of got the bug.
The bug. And it's the pride, really, of feeling that and seeing, wow, you know, this food is... I really like it, and so cool to see other people like it. It's just a really nice feeling. And from that, you know, back when I was in high school, I actually made a little bit of money making websites. So that was my little gig back then. So I made the website for our restaurant, this little hole in the wall in the basement of Flushing with no English menu back then.
Yeah, and we should talk about that.
Yeah.
That Flushing is full of these subterranean, now they're also above ground, malls.
Yes.
Where there could be 20 or 30 food businesses, micro businesses,
yes,
that people like your dad would open,
right.
And to this day they're still there,
yeah.
Right? And some of them are much more upscale now, but your dad's was one of the first ones downstairs,
yes.
Right?
It was like a new thing. So like you said, in Flushing, there are these food courts, food malls. When you hear food court these days, you think higher end, well built out, well lit, well designed places.
These
you know,
were not those.
You know, they were not. Yeah, they were not like that. This used to be so we opened in a place called Golden Shopping Mall in Flushing. It's a subterranean basement food court that used to be a clothing store of some sort, like a little. I don't know what it, I actually don't even remember. It's like one of those buildings that you remember was there as a kid. You just never went in, you know.
Sure.
Like it's just like a blind spot there.
Yeah,
So he opened up. That was turned into, that spot was turned into a food court, because at that point there were a lot of folks that were not trying to open a business to make a lot of money to capitalize on this. Really, they're just making a living. That was the difference.
Or they're making extra money on top of their day job.
Right.
Right?
Well, it does get very difficult, very challenging. So most of the time, they will probably have to leave that in order to focus solely on this. But it's really just like I was saying before, how when my father came over from China, there's very few options for someone who doesn't really know English. But, you know, one of the options is also to maybe open up your own, right? So, but in a hyper-competitive place like Flushing in New York, you know, you got to have an edge. You can't just open another Chinese restaurant. So this was a way people were discovering, you know, as more different immigrants from different parts of China were coming over, they were like, yeah, you know, we don't have any food from our hometown here. Why don't I start selling
this? And it's not a small hometown.
Yeah, exactly. Whether it's Xi'an, whether it's Tianjin, whether it's northeastern China, whether it's Shanghai and other parts of Sichuan for other types of food over there, there's a lot that China has to offer. So that's why the wave started. But like you said, now Flushing has become more expensive for rent. You know, things are becoming more commercialized, much like how Koreatown has changed in New York as well.
For sure. Yeah. And I would assume that when all the Hong Kong money started coming over here, that changed Flushing dramatically.
Absolutely. Whether it's come from Hong Kong, come from international, come from the mainland, really.
Right.
Because a lot of folks like to invest money in a more well-managed economy compared to ones in China where... It's Wild West. You know, it's safer to put money in the U.S. than
in China
a lot of
times. Got it. So I want you to describe the food of your province and the food of your city.
Okay.
Because I'm totally fascinated when I read your descriptions of it.
Sure. Our food is, to sum up, traditionally every region of China has a few words to sum up their food. Like Sichuan is mala, so... It's spicy and tingly. That's their profile. Our profile is xiangla and suan. So suan means sour. Xiangla means fragrantly spicy. So that's kind of how our food is. It's mostly along those profiles. If you had our food before, you see a lot of use of the black vinegar, a lot of use of course, you know, the red chilies.
Which supplies the sourness.
Yes, exactly.
And the red chili supplies
the fragrant
spiciness. Which I've never actually heard... anyone talk about
right.
putting fragrant as the adjective in front of spicy. So, it's,
you
cool.
know, yeah, I mean, it's the scent of it. It's not supposed to be super, you know, it's not supposed to burn.
And no, and it doesn't. I mean, I just have to tell you that my last three meals have been to prepare.
Oh, well.
You know, I had to go back and basically try to have almost everything on the menu.
Oh, well, I appreciate that.
So it was up at 102nd and Broadway.
Oh, okay. All right.
Up near Columbia. And I was struck because I really did taste the fragrantly spicy and sour notes.
Yes.
That even the dishes that are marked as hot on the menu
yes.
are more fragrantly spicy than tinglingly spicy.
Right. For our food, it's not necessarily about just trying to be spicy for the sake of spicy. You know, of course, different people take it at different ways. Some people might think it's spicy. Some people might think it's not. But for the most part, traditionally, that's how right. it should be. Actually, when I went back to Xi'an, I'm actually going a couple weeks as well, but I've been going more recently these days. And when I try the food over there, just to benchmark a little bit, it's not spicy. It's just
yeah.
it's just about the scent of it, not so much about the you know, the yeah. burning part of
yeah.
it.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Unpleasant. Yeah.
And what are some of the quintessential dishes that you serve with those flavor profiles?
With those flavor profiles, we serve our liang pi cold skin noodles. That's a very signature dish that we serve from the region. It's spicy. It's sour.
They're
it's
great. Tangy. And yep. we have an editor who's obsessed. He makes them himself.
Oh, wow, that's
and
hard.
he told our associate producer, Grace, he said, mm-hmm. Ed has to get Jason to give me the recipe, you know, for the noodles.
Yes, well, you know, that is upcoming as well. I'll speak a little
cool.
bit about
all
that
right.
as well. So I'll cap that off in the end.
Yeah.
But basically, it's definitely one of the deceivingly hardest dishes to make in our whole repertoire of dishes. Other dishes, like all of our noodles use some components of the spicy and the sour, as well as our burger. You know, lamb burger is also spicy. Now, getting into the lamb burger, I'd like to talk a little bit about other things that people have come to know when they think of our mm-hmm. cuisine. Different spices, you know, spices that may not be from China originally. So Xi'an has its, you know, traditional local type of, you know, like Chinese Han ethnicity people, they eat certain things. But there's also other ethnic groups in Xi'an, such as the Huiming. So Huiming are the Chinese Muslims that live in Xi'an. They're a significant minority. And historically, them as well as other groups have traveled through Xi'an from other parts of the world, really bringing different types of spices.
And all those people have influenced your cooking.
Yes. So our cooking, for example, the spicy cumin lamb. Lamb is obviously very gamey. So to counter that, or not to counter, I don't like to say cover, but more work with that gaminess is cumin. You know, cumin comes from India, just like it did in the old days. We use a lot of that. Just as an example, a lot of other spices, which I can't list all of them out yet. I know that, you know,
well,
folks,
you know, that's another thing I'm supposed to come away with.
Oh, well, you know, I'll give you a few. You know, things like coriander we use a lot of. Things like, you know,
I think
cardamom.
You're shining me on. You give me a few of them.
I'll give you a few, but they're no secrets. I'll be honest. They're typical of the spice mixes that are involved with our type of cuisine, certain types of meats. You'll see those things being used to work with those the flavors of the meats better. So definitely a lot of those are not from China. So but there's a lot of use of that in our cuisine as well.
And you talk about the chili oil mm-hmm. being at the heart of the sauces, at
sure.
least.
Yes.
And that's not even your father's recipe. That's your grandfather's recipe.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, so my father's recipes are based off of family recipes. He's made his own modifications through the years, but, you know, his basis is on things that my grandfather made. You know, my grandfather likes to cook. You know, he still cooks these days. He makes simple dishes, one or two, have a little baijiu on the side, which is the Chinese liquor, very pungent liquor.
He makes?
He makes
a food. Chinese hooch?
I that'd be dangerous, but he definitely enjoys a nice, you know, a sip of the strong liquor with some fish or some meats and, you know, some peanuts. That's kind of his thing. So he's always been that type of person to cook. And my father got a lot of that from him, even though they're very different people. But I think it definitely comes from, you know, that the family traditions. So,
yeah. What was it like for a young Chinese American to go into your dad's business? Can't imagine that was easy.
Well, firstly, not even about the logistics of learning everything. Just the feeling that you're kind of giving up on the path that you're supposed to be going for, the corporate way, the way that your parents, you know, have pushed you towards for a while, whether or not they want you to remain on there to yourself, you still feel like, oh man, I kind of failed. It's like a step back, you know, going to the safe route of the family business, whether it's a big corporation or a small restaurant, it still feels like a fallback almost, right? So that was definitely kind of something I had to kind of live with through this process. But other than that, you know, just going into the restaurant business by itself, it was very difficult for me because as a kid, I never worked in a restaurant. Like you were saying before, my father didn't want me to go in the restaurant business back when I was getting an education.
He thought it was too hard.
Yeah, it is. It is hard. And I don't think I could handle that. I actually remember when I was in college, I wanted to check it out because I was like, what's the restaurant business like? So I actually applied for internship with the restaurant company, with Hillstone, actually. And
that's a famous restaurant internship program.
Yeah, they have a great management program. I wanted to get my feet wet. I don't know why. I just thought it was interesting. It was something that I was thinking, you know, my father has a restaurant. It's not much of a restaurant at this point yet, but it's still a restaurant, and I'm interested in that. They came back to me and were like, you know, do you have any restaurant experience? I was like, no. They're like, so I didn't really get a call back. But unfortunately, that didn't really pan out. So, you know, that was the extent of my foray into trying to do a restaurant work. But
legit.
Yeah, legit, real restaurant work. But now that, you know, back here, before I came back, you know, on that phone call I had with my father telling him, hey, look, I'm going to come back. I kind of want to help expand the business because I think if I don't help, it's going to this whole opportunity is going to go away. Like your restaurant's going to get copied by someone and they'll get the following. And even if your food is better, people won't hear about it. You know, you'll get muted, basically. I'll help you. Let's work together and let's expand the business, you know, because in 4 years, he maintained the business. He couldn't really take it to the next level. So I think, you know, he was very receptive of that. But he told me at that point, he's like, well, okay, you can come back and, you know, we'll work together. I kind of expected you to call me. You know, I was expecting your call.
He had to put it like that.
Yeah. He's always, you know, anticipating everything, quote unquote. But he was like, yeah, well, but when you come back, though, you're going to have to work hard. You're going to start from the bottom. You're going to do everything yourself. Like, it's not going to be easy work, or I'm not going to go easy on you. I said, all right. I mean, you know, it's fine. You know, I moved from dorms to dorms before. Moving boxes, that was hard, you know. But, you know, it was much harder than I anticipated. So a lot of the first one to three years was really just figuring out the business, the daily operations in the stores. Spent a lot of time in there. And yeah. So
did you have daily clashes with your dad?
Well, I wouldn't call them classes, more like just, my dad's not much of a teacher. He's more of a just, you see that over there? Pick that up. Dump it in. And like when we're cooking, I'm like, how much? He's like, just
no,
pour
I
it.
Said
just
clashes,
pour.
Not
oh,
clashes.
Oh, sorry, I misheard. So clashes, at that point, I think because I was still very new, I didn't have much basis to go on to clash with him yet.
To push back.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't know anything yet. So it was a lot of just like, okay, all right, okay, I'll listen to you. But after the years went by and I started understanding the business a lot better, I had my own perspectives. And that's when the clashes start more and more these days. We did start to diverge a little bit more and more. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, Jason, we haven't even gotten to how you
Xi'an Famous Foods.
Xi'an Famous Foods became what it is today, which is a fast-growing empire of fast casual restaurants. It's gone way past probably what your dad thought it could be. And I'm sure you had quite a bit to do with it. It hasn't even been discovered by non-Chinese people at this point. So we're going to talk about all that in the next episode of Special Sauce.
Yes, absolutely.
So thank you, Jason Wang.
Yes.
And we will see you next time.
All right,
so
thank
long,
you.
Serious
That's
Eaters.
That's great, yeah.